Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the most exciting hour of wrestling you can imagine. It is absolutely the most fun. It is pro wrestling interviews. We got a full house tonight, and we're going to be talking about the upcoming Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame sponsored, the Carolina Wrestling Hall of Fame. That is coming up in 13 days, not 14 days, and we got a we got a house full. I'll now turn it over to the amazing Velvet, and Velvet, I will tell you that Professor Wrestling has joined us, and we have someone from area code 843270. Other than that, you know the crew. It's all yours, buddy.
All right. Welcome, family and friends, to another edition of Pro Wrestling Interviews. Tonight, we're talking Carolina Wrestling Hall of Fame. We have inductee Crazy Train with us tonight. Crazy Train, how are you this evening?
All aboard, ladies and gentlemen. I'm doing all right. How y'all doing?
Good, good, good. I'm also a Hall of Fame inductee, but we're not going to talk about me. We're going to talk about everybody else. Is Susan on the line? Did she make it?
Well, not yet, but we now have someone from, looks like maybe Professor Wrestling just joined us back.
Okay.
So
on May 15th, Holy City Brewing Company is hosting the Carolina Wrestling Hall of Fame. We're going to do a meet and greet starting at noon. Everybody who's coming that's an inductee, please bring stuff to sell, pictures, whatever you want to do, whatever you have. We're going to have a good time. We're going to take pictures. We're going to talk to fans. And then we're going to have a little something to eat. And then we're going to change and get into the Hall of Fame. It is going to be hot. I'm just preparing everybody. It's going to be hot. So if you're bringing a suit, don't put it on right away. Telling you that now. It's probably going to be hot. So, Crazy Train, my question is to you, sir.
Okay.
How many Hall of Fames have you been in, and what would this one mean to you?
This will be my first. I mean, I'm just an indie J, bro.
you and me both, bro.
You know, it's always, no matter what your line of work or anything you are passionate about, put your time and effort into, it's always it's always you know, a great honor to be, to have your peers say, hey man, you did a good job, you know, an attaboy, so to speak, I guess. So it's humbling. When I was approached, I was shocked, to say the least. To go in with Susan Green, who is of course my mentor, means even more. So, I mean, humbled, I guess, is shocked. But it also kind of makes you realize, maybe those, you know, those long car rides, those weekdays that I was wore out and still got up and went to the gym, maybe it was worth it, you know? So.
Right. I believe so. I think you've been the consummate professional, like we talked in the green room earlier. You are very professional about your bookings, not missing bookings. I'm sure life has happened, and that is for all of us, that we've had to probably miss one or here or there, whatever. But that's life. But as far as everything else, anytime that you were here in Charleston, you were always here. And everywhere else that you wrestled, North Carolina, South Carolina, wherever else, you know, there's been nothing but good things said about you, that you've always been there, you've always been ready to work, you've always done your job. And that's good to have your peers say that. And I agree with you on that point. So this will be, for me, will be my third, and in June I will go into my fourth. I'm going into the UPWA one in Wilmington in July.
Oh, Velvet Papa Strode has joined us.
Oh, another inductee, fellow inductee. Papa Strode, how are you this evening, brother?
Hello, everyone. How's everybody?
Good, good. So I'm going to give you the question that I gave Crazy Train, okay?
Okay.
The question
is it just as crazy as Crazy Train?
That's not humanly possible, I don't think, brother.
No, it's not. You're right.
Okay, I got you. All right. Go ahead.
Right. He's right on that, but anyway.
It's not a work, man. It's a shoot, not a gimmick.
Yeah.
Hey, in this business, man, welcome to the family, man.
Right? I love this. I love these guys, man. Y'all are a trip. So my question was, how many Hall of Fames are you in, and what does going into the Carolina Wrestling Hall of Fame first class mean to you?
I've been really fortunate to be inducted into a few. I know I was inducted to the Maryland Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame a few years back, and that was a big honor and everything. And for the Carolina Wrestling Hall of Fame, I grew up in the Carolinas, and had some great matches in the Carolina area through the years, and to be actually a part of the Hall of Fame with the Carolina Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, it really hits home, and it means a lot. And so, I mean, you know, I've had some good matches in like various parts of the country and overseas, but Carolinas is always will be my home. So, and especially with the class for 2021, a lot of people in this class I've worked with, teamed with, and shared laughs with, ribbed with, broke bread with, you name it. And so it's almost like a coming home party, if you will. So yeah, it's big means a lot to me.
Well, great. That's what we want to hear. That not only that, it like Crazy Train said, it's good to know that your peers care about you, and that, you know, basically an attaboy, pat on the back, job well done. Things like that, and it's awesome for everybody that's involved, and it's going to be a good time. It's, you know, we'll be able to hang out, we'll be able to do the meet and greet, and then go into the Hall of Fame as a family, and that's what it's about. You know, these kids today don't know the brotherhood in the family. It's all clicky and this and that, and it'll go back eventually. Because somebody will smarten them up one day, hopefully.
Yeah, let them get older. They'll smarten up real quick. Age will do wonders.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let them pay a couple of bills.
Yep.
Right.
No.
Yeah, I think Waylon Jennings really knows it best. Old age and treachery always overcomes youth and skill. Is that right?
Exactly.
Amen, brother.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
You know what though, Velvet? I'm a little worried about the state.
Hang on.
The state of the business, and
mm-hmm.
Stroh can speak to this too. We both came up in an era, especially Stroh with his family connections,
right?
Where there were guys in the locker room who knew how to do it right, and if you were smart, you shut up and you listened. And those guys would pass their knowledge along once they believed in you and trusted you and understood that you were around to stay and that you took this seriously like they did. And those guys, the way the business changed so much and starting in the 90s, that generation, which is essentially me and Stroh now and guys our age, we're not sharing the locker rooms with these guys like the Ghost guys were in our day. And so I'm afraid what's going to happen is, I think you're right, I think as they get older they will, but my fear is they're coming up learning how to do it the wrong way, and because there's that generation gap I'm talking about that's missing, by the time they're at our place, there isn't going to be a generation left in locker rooms saying, hey, do it this way, kid. They're only going
right.
to talk the wrong way because that's what they're doing now, and they're going to think they just don't get it. They don't get it. They think, well, you know, getting these many fans at a live show or getting this level of reaction means I'm over, means we're doing it right. No.
No, it doesn't. No. You're right. You're correct. Absolutely. I mean, I'm a little bit older than both of y'all. I've been around for a hot minute. But you're correct. There's nobody left to say, hey, look here, kid. You know? Well, you driving around in this place. Go ahead.
I think those people are around, but either they just I don't want to throw my brothers under the bus, but
either they don't give a damn
or just the way the political structure is now with a lot of companies, like you said earlier, they can't really say anything, you know?
Right.
So
there's a lot of doing that.
Was so tight knit back in the day, you know what I mean?
Oh
because,
yeah.
They wouldn't let just anybody in the business because you know we're kind of like family, kind of looked out for each other, you know? Sam.
Exactly.
I think when I broke in, you know, in the mid-90s, I was probably one of the last group of guys that went through that beat the crap out of you before they smartened you up, you know? And I just – on my own podcast, we've talked about this when controversy has arisen in training, you know, and I've told them.
Right.
It's like, you know, if you don't like – you need to understand, I'm taking this as a football player and a wrestler, both. All you fans that want to complain about, because you get the curtain pulled back, you know, to use the Wizard of Oz analogy, do you not realize some of that stuff that goes on is what creates the environment, the competitiveness that gives you the product you like so much? I mean, everybody loves sausage, but nobody wants to know how it's made now, do they?
Amen.
Right?
And it's like, I have to tell my family. They didn't understand why I wanted to get into the business. And I just had to tell them.
Listen.
I'm not wired like a normal person. Most of the people, none of you guys are either. I know you're not. That's why you're in this crazy business.
There's something mentally wrong with us.
Almost. That's for damn sure. Amen. Amen.
I mean, and it's like, I'm not trying to make any excuses for that. It is what it is.
Right.
You know, I agree with Vince McMahon. If you don't like it, there's this thing on your clicker called on-off, you know?
Yep, or turn the channel.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we can sit here and critique, like you said, we can sit here and critique all we want to. But bottom line is, you're right. The politics right now dictates what's going on in the bigger companies and most of them. But, like you said again, we can complain and knock the product and all that, but they are on TV. They have a TV show. They're doing something. You know, we don't always have to agree.
Yeah.
But it is a product that they're putting on television that people want to still get to because they love this crazy business. So they're going to try to get there. And I don't fault anybody for trying to get there. But it is what it is.
There was a saying when I first broke into business, and anybody young and old can attest to this, right, that you'll get used to it, but you never really do. I mean, bumps still hurt.
Right? Correct.
You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
it's just one of those things.
Now, Sinister, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
You were at the power plant back in the day, correct?
Absolutely.
So tell us about that experience at the power plant.
To be honest with you, compared to this so-called development center where they got today, the power plant, not the stuff they show, not what they want you to see on TV, the power plant was actually like Paris Island. You know, they made you quit. And they didn't want anybody that just, okay, I look good, so I'm going to be the next star. You know, you had to pay the price or you had to walk out the door. And I seen people get hurt. I seen guys go to the hospital. And everybody there was, I don't want to say arrogant, but, you know, at that time, I guess it was changing. They was, you know, they was just out for them because everybody wanted to be a star. But I'm gonna be honest with you. I got hurt plenty of times, and I didn't like it, but it made me be thankful because I got the experience to work with a lot of big names and learn the inside stuff that a lot of these guys today don't know. So, like, as far as you guys making it to the Hall of Fame, you know, I take my hat off to you because a lot of guys don't even make it that far in their career just to get to that point. I didn't even think I'd make it this far while I still be in the sport. And
right.
That's why I'm very appreciative of what I do have now. You know, that's why I think a lot of these...
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish.
That's why I think a lot of these younger upcoming stars, they really need to sit down and listen to the veterans because right now, to be honest with you, they got it easy. You know, and they're lucky Vince McMahon even take a second look at them because right now wrestling is hurting real bad. It is, and I just hope one day, you know, like you said, everybody stop being all cliquish and come back to being a brotherhood. Cause that's what it really all about, you know.
And I think a testament to you is everything that you've done. Physically outside of wrestling with jiu-jitsu and mixed martial arts has kept you in the shape to continue to wrestle at your age right now. So that's a testament to you. Plus, you've got a jiu-jitsu fight coming up, right?
Right.
That's in July?
July the 25th or 24th.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So we definitely... Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Sinister, what belt are you?
Right now, brown belt, second stripe. So the next one will be two more stripes before I actually graduate to the black. Because I hold three other belts, different styles, but jiu-jitsu is a tough style, but it's a beautiful style.
I think it's
cooler.
You can get into it at any age, so I'm
kind of
interested in it lately. So I'm glad I
can
ask somebody.
Oh yeah,
you know, Sinister's so right. When he was talking about the power play, I mean, they'll damn well push you to you almost hate them. And then when you get to hating them, you realize, hey, I love this even more. I love them. I love being a part of it, right? So it's pretty wild, man.
That is funny. But it's the truth. Absolutely the truth. You know, that's same with Susie. You know, when I went there, she said, forget everything you learned. Forget everything you watch on TV. Turn it off. This is what, she broke me down and brought me back up. And she had to because I learned from a bunch of goofballs in the beginning until I met her. And when I met her, it was like, holy crap. But I appreciated the business more in the end, you know. So, yeah. So, Helms, you got any questions for anybody? Or did he disappear?
No, I'm just listening right now.
Okay, cool. Well, So not to steal anybody else's thunder on the Carolina Wrestling Hall of Fame, but there will be another one coming up soon, and a few of y'all on this line will be inducted into your second one. So just to give me a little heads up, when that comes out, you will know, and you know who you are, maybe. I know one. I could say one right now. One is going to be Crazy Train. I'll tell you that now.
You told me that last time we talked.
I know. I'm just making sure you remember.
Bro, I'm trying not to steal your spot. I mean, if you're going to go ahead and booger the spot now, go ahead. I don't care.
The booking the spot.
No, booger it.
As long as y'all can lock up, that'd be great.
I'll booger it all up. No, I'm not. The thing is, it's good to, like you said, it's good to be loved. And it's been... and all of us, you know, in some shape or form in this crazy business do deserve some accolades, some of us more than others, obviously Crazy Train and Papa Stro. So it's just, it is a humbling thing, and it was awesome to get asked. So, yes, I agree with you on that.
Can I elaborate on something Sinister said?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, he was making a good point, I think. It was kind of what I was talking about earlier with the, you know, the way I was trained. Like, I know the way Stro was trained, even though I don't know that much about his training. I know he was brought up that way too, with the beating that they took. You know, that's what I was talking about. But you also talked a lot about what to do, when to do it. That's the thing I think is missing. Not so much the what to do, is the when to do it and the why we do it. That, I think, is
correct.
Part of the issue with old school fans and guys and gals in the business compared to what we're seeing now. I'm reminded of a very early in my career. I had a booking probably my first year in Mississippi. And the promoter had brought in Stan Hansen, and he worked my trainer. And they, after the show was over, and I was so glad when he went in Vince's Hall of Fame, because Stan, I think, has this reputation amongst smart fans as like difficult to deal with. He was just knew where his money was, you know, and my interactions. Man was not anything like that, and it started that night where he put his arm around me in the locker room and basically said, "Hey kid, can I talk to you?" And there was a, I don't know why, I'm humbled that he felt or sensed that I took this seriously and told me a few things and told me not only the what to do but the when to do it and why we do it that way. And that's very lacking now. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very lacking.
Dan and Brody were some of the first guys I've met in pro wrestling, actually, first met. And I back then I had a thing for pirates, so I kept calling Bruiser Brody Blackbeard after my favorite pirate last year. And every time I would do that, he would have his elbow stand. It's like, hey, Betty called me Blackbeard. He got a kick out of his, you laugh, so pretty well.
That's funny.
Hey, Brody gave up on me. Brody actually
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, I was going to make a joke, but he did spend his time on the island. But go ahead.
No, I was like, Brody ran.
Wouldn't surprise me.
But I think he gave up on me quick, and that's why he turned me over to Bubba. He's like, the hell with this crowbar.
That's funny.
I mean,
Brody
works, Brody's, you know, he's light. He's like, I don't like these guys. They're snug. Give him one of Moore's guys. They can handle it.
Right? That's funny. Holy crap.
No, I owe Brody a lot, too. I mean, because he did get in. He taught me a lot. And those guys, I can never repay Bubba and Mickey and Brody, Susan, the people that helped me get into this business.
Yeah,
my dream.
Exactly.
You know, like,
exactly.
And like Stro said, this was a closed business. I remember as a fan, as a kid, asking Wahoo after a show here in Greenville one time, how do I get into the business? And he just chuckles and go to school, kid. And
right?
I didn't understand at the time how many levels he really meant that.
Right.
You know? And then to get to be his friend and know him at the end of his life, oh, my gosh.
Yep.
Wow.
That was awesome. Yes, it was.
I totally understand
He worked with
that.
Us quite a bit. He worked with us quite a bit at ACW before he passed away, too. So he was a great guy.
Yeah,
that's how I
met him was through y'all.
Yeah.
Next thing I know, I'm his dolphin buddy. Every time he wanted to come down here and hit 18 holes in Dick Furman.
Nice. There you go. I'm going to tell you who else, the guy who helped me, other than Wahoo, I'm going to tell you a guy that helped me real well, was Bill Eady. Bill Eady was at one of our shows. Yeah, yeah. He was at one of our shows, and he was wrestling the Gambler. And, of course, you know, I was managing the Gambler at the time. And we were sitting in the back. He goes, what are you going to do? I said, I'll do whatever y'all need me to do. I said, y'all are working. I'm not taking away from the work in the ring. And he looked at me. And he goes, all right, well, let's talk about this then. So we talked about it. And So, and I was, we were in Columbia, and I was like, hurry up during the match. I was like, hurry up, man. Finish this jump. We got 18 to play at Augusta National, so I came out dressed in golf attire. And I got my gimmick, right? Got my wood. So I'm out there, and he was so funny. He's like, you know, okay, get ready. So I jump up. I got the golf club behind his back. He's holding me by my shirt. I chuck it to the gambler. Flips me over the ring. Boom, one, two. You know, we got all that stuff done. Go to the back. He comes up to me and goes, look here. Let me tell you something. He goes, I didn't know you could get up that high. He goes, I'm 6'5". He goes, I saw the ring rope, the top rope, and then I saw the first row of chairs. I thought you were going to hit the people in the first row of chairs. He goes, I chucked you. Yeah, you did. But it was funny. But then we had a long talk at dinner, and it was great. He's like, same thing with you. Let's talk about the business. And that's what we did, you know, and we became friends. I went to New York and wrestled with him on Long Island for Dave Caruso with him. That was awesome. Do that. So, yeah, Bill's another good guy.
You know, go ahead. Speaking of Bill, after one of our matches several years ago, he told me one of the coolest Andre the Giant stories, right? Just back when he was back when he was Mass Superstar, right? And Andre was they put Andre with Mighty Igor, and turned out Andre and Igor had heat, right? So Andre starts off the match with Bill as Mass Superstar, and as soon as he locked up, Andre said, "Take it home." And Bill's like, "Are you sure?" The bell just rang. He said, "I said take it home." He said, "Okay, yes, sir." So they took it home, and Igor never got in the ring, right? So after the match, I think it's Jim Crockett goes to Bill. It's like, you know, what's going on? When was that? You know what I mean? What's happening? So Bill puts his arm around Jim Crockett, takes him over to Andre, and says, "You see that big guy over there? He was the guy that told us to take it home." And Jim Crockett looked at Andre, then looked back at Bill and said, "Good match."
Now that's funny. God.
Can I get my Bill Eady story now since we seem to all have one?
Yeah,
go for it.
I think I've told you this one before, Velvet. I was working a show down in Georgia, and I was just about getting to that point where I kind of knew what I was doing. And the promoter put me in a tag team match with a guy I'd never tagged with before and a team that he was trying to give a push. And he told me, make him look good, Train. And and I said, well, what do you want the finish to be? And the promoter told me. And so I said, okay. And I went to the kid. He was kind of green, and I told him, you know, why don't you go over clean with your finish? And I told him what I wanted the finish to be, and he said, oh, that's fine, that'll work great. And the only thing I was big on was make sure that you feed on the hot tag, because I was going to be taking the hot tag. And he didn't feed on the hot tag. He took the hot tag and just stood there like an oak tree. And I got a little upset, and I walked over, and I shook him multiple times. I remember hitting him, and every time I hit him in the forehead, I was telling him, why won't you feed on a hot tag, you dumb ass? And I pulled him into the ring, and I pulled him into the ring. Look at the whole match. We had the crowd, man. We had lots of heat. Oh, it made me so mad. But anyway. You know, I had him cut me off. We went to the finish and got it done. And the main event that night was Bill Eady and my trainer, Bubba Kirk. And so they're sitting in the back talking over their match. And I come to the back, and it's kind of obvious that I'm heated. Several of the guys come up to me and say something to me. And I sit down next to Bill. And Bill, you know, with those big hands of his, reaches over, puts his hand on my knee, and he looks at me and he says, "Train, the best thing about that match is it's over. Just let it go." Some of the best advice I've ever gotten in my life.
Love that guy.
Speaking of hot tags, y'all remember Bad News Brown, right? We're in Japan.
Yeah.
And, well, he's they were in a tag match with him, Dusty and Inoki, Dusty Rhodes, and when it was time to give Inoki, I think gave Dusty the hot tag, right? You know, Dusty does his usual spill bonnet elbow type of thing, right? But when Inoki tags in Dusty, right? You know, bad dude just came there and just no-sold everything, started, you know, beating the crap out of Dusty in the ring, right? to the hot tag. And finally, you know, they get on the bus. They take the little buses, you know, from town to town, right? So bad news in the back and everybody. And then here comes Dusty getting on this bus, coming towards bad news. And he's, like, crying, saying, baby, what? You killed the dream, baby, in Japan, baby. you put the plumbing on me, Daddy. What happened, baby? You broke the dream heart, if you will. Oh my God! Great stuff. Man.
Oh yeah, that's funny. Dusty. Oh, that's pretty good. Man. Oh my gosh!
I worked with him a couple times when he was running turnbuckle. And I remember he was kind of having some heat with another promoter. I was working in another part of Georgia. And I already had a booking with this other promoter, and he was trying to book me on another show and double book me. And I just told him, I said, look, I grew up in the Carolinas. You will not need a bigger mark for you than me, Dusty. I said, but I cannot just say no to this guy. He's already got my word. I would do the same if the shoe was on the other foot. You know? Mm-hmm. If you had booked me first and then he tried to book me, I'd say no. And in that God love him, God rest his soul, just looks at me from across the table, it was at the back of the high school gym in Warner Robins. Well, you know, kid, that's all right. I'm just like you know, one of the greatest baby faces of all time. I thought maybe I could, you know, a 3-time world champion, I could help you with your baby facing a little bit. But that's okay. I understand. You go ahead and take your book. He's just burying me while he's putting me over his face.
Right.
And put himself over in the process.
That's
classic.
That sounds like the heat that Bill Dundee had with Ian Rotten up in, like, the Midwest territory, man. And because someone brought up Ian Rotten was running a town near where we're doing it, near Memphis, right? And and Dundee just goes off and they got bested in Rotten at hardcore shit.
That's a great impression.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
He's the truth.
I don't think young fans understand how athletic Bill Dundee was. He's a freaking trapeze artist. Before he got to visit him.
Oh, yeah.
They have no idea.
Look at Adrian Street.
Oh.
Another one.
He's forgotten more ways to hurt people than I'll ever know.
Exactly. I met him in Alabama, and I told him about my gimmick. Because it's a beautiful gimmick. If you do it right, it's beautiful. Like, okay. I got you. You can make a career out of that. I'm like, I'm trying.
He did.
Oh, no. It absolutely did. Oh, my God. He was amazing. And you know what's funny? All the smaller guys like that, like Ray the Crippler Stevens, Bill Dundee, Adrian Street, Kevin Sullivan. I mean, all of them. Great athletes. All of them. And they were smaller guys. Oh, yeah. Bobby Eaton, hands down, is a phenomenal worker. Period. Phenomenal.
And the nicest guy in the wrestling business that I've met. No offense to you guys.
No, he is. No,
oh,
you're
he is.
Right.
He is.
Absolutely.
He really is.
So was Sweet Stan Lane when he came and worked for us here, too. He was nice. All get up.
Was that before or after the hair implants? I shouldn't ask that.
Man, you ain't right.
Yeah, that's why he went to Hidger and Smoky Mountain.
Right.
When the Heavenly Bodies and Dr. Tom.
Yeah. You were working there then, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Good times, man. I remember when he was used to go to Plum Crazy in Charlotte and, like, tear up the dance floor. They'd call him Stan the Man Lane because he was always checking his thing on the dance floor there. Trouble with Charlotte. Plum Crazy.
I think that's where Shane Nichols was bouncing.
Right.
Remember Shane? You remember Shane Crazy Grain? He was a pit bull.
Did he work down there with us in Charleston?
Yeah, well, he did. He worked the Carolinas. He worked Greenville. He worked North Carolina. But he worked at the club.
You know how many chair shots
that
took in my 15 years?
No. All right. You probably would if you saw him, but anyway.
I know Rocky King would drive by every now and then, right? Yeah, because I see Rocky King and Pez Watley hang out a few times. Yeah.
Rocky King was cool. I liked him.
Yeah, there's a saying about Rocky King, man. If he goes near your girl, you'll never see her come back.
Yeah, that's right. That's it.
I've heard that before.
Exactly. You're right. Absolutely right.
Nah,
he's
cool, a good
though.
Dude, man. I miss
he's
Rocky.
Good, yeah. And then one of our guests on here, Rick McCord, nice guy too, very nice dude.
Oh, Rick's great, man.
And was tag team champion with Thunderbolt Patterson in the territory. So yeah,
Thunderbolt,
I like that guy.
Yeah, I love Thunderbolt,
like,
man.
They were both nice, and I like Tiger Conway Jr. Met him; he was super nice. Super nice, too.
I tell you, Thunderbolt, man, no one can give a promo like Thunderbolt can.
Oh, good Lord.
Get the best
You have
promo.
To take the mic away from him.
Right.
You ever heard a story Bernie tells about T-Bolt doing that promo one time on the old not the 605, but the early morning one they used to have on TBS?
Uh-huh.
He tells his story of like, so this had to be like 85, like when you know him and the Midnights first got into Crockett territory, and the Crockett had just taken over the time slot. And him and Tommy Rich were doing like a specific, or they were entering the show, and Dusty had the book, and he tells T-Bolt, make sure you mention whatever the town was they were running in Georgia that night, because whenever the town got mentioned on TV, the house popped for some reason. You know, and so T-Bolt tells Tommy he's going to go first, right?
No boy.
And T-Bolt goes out there and he starts, you know, he's doing that Thunderbolt promo. Ooh, Gordon, let me tell you, yeah. Ooh, we got to go. And he never said anything to staff, nor did Tommy get a chance to cut a promo. That's classic. They said Dusty's in the
that
back. Oh, damn it, the house is going to suck now.
I found a boat. Say something for me, brother. Hey, man.
Don't forget the channel,
that's a
brother.
Good Tommy Rich. That was a good Tommy. That's funny. Holy crap. Another one that you don't give the mic to was Burrhead Jones. I get it.
I love Burrhead.
You gave him the mic over. Done. You worked a show with us, I think, when Burrhead had the mic, didn't you, Crazy Train?
Uh-huh.
When Burrhead wrestled the Gambler, and he was talking and talking. We were all sitting in the back going, somebody take that mic out of his hand. Somebody hurry up.
I do remember that show because I think it was Burke High School, and it was like 4,000 degrees because it was like July or August in Charleston.
Yep, it was, and it was 4,000 degrees, and you're absolutely right. It was awful.
I was in a show one time, and it came around to Terry Funk having a match with Dusty Rhodes, right? Uncle Terry, and someone gave Uncle Terry the microphone. Oh, my God. He gets on there, right? Dusty's all ring already, right? And he cuts the promo. He says, you know, I respect everyone in this wrestling business. I even respect that banana-nosed Ric Flair. But I've always hated you, Dusty Rhodes, you big fat whale. And Dusty's in the ring trying to – he's corpse and holding his face, about to lose it.
Well, that's funny. Good Lord.
I remember about the time that you were getting your push in Atlanta, Stro, and you all having, like, booking changes every other week. You remember that time? Terry worked a show with me. I can't remember if it was Alabama or Georgia around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're all
yeah.
sitting around there, you know, sitting around under the learning tree of Terry. And I said, Terry, who the hell exactly is in charge in Atlanta? And he let me say, kid, if I knew, I'd tell you, because then I know who's asking you.
No, that's funny.
I remember it was Harlem Heat, William Regal, and I were playing cards in between the boards going up and down of who was going to work with who that night.
Oh, wow.
It didn't get finalized until like a few minutes before, you know, TV started, right? So, oh, my God. So we just sat down in the middle of the floor and started playing cards with Teddy Long and Sting. And...
Oh, wow. That's funny. Just wait for the card. Nothing like last minute. Oh, wait, that's wrestling for you. Never mind.
Card subject to change. Remember that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All of them proved that.
Pretty much.
I'm trying to tell fans, you don't understand how true that is. I've seen the card change on the whiteboard during the show.
Oh. My crazy train, I came out of my second major surgery in 2017. I was 5 days removed from the hospital, okay? It was my benefit show at another brewery in town, and Stroh came up, right? Stroh's, my daughter's running around, you know, just, she loves Big Game James, that's her buddy. So anyway, couple no-shows, and somebody just decided he wasn't going to wrestle anymore. So I said, okay. So I'm weak as all get up. I go in the back, and I said, okay, we're switching up. This is what you're doing. 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 You got it? Yes. Okay, good. So Stroh looks over, and he met me for the first time on my show in 17, and he looks at Susan and goes, who's that guy? Well, that's Velvet. Oh, that's Velvet. He did introduce himself to me. He goes, then he comes, and Stroh walks up behind me as we're watching what was going on, the opening promo, and he goes, you've done this before a time or two, haven't you? And I went, eh. I slept at the Holiday Inn Express last night. Like, okay. and then my daughter's going, you know what match you are? You know who's doing what? You got it? And she's walking around, and Big Game James like, girl, I got it. And it's Big D-Boys, I got it. And asked Stroh and Susan and this and that. So here again, Susan goes, oh, yeah, before you even ask me, that's Velvet's daughter. So she knows what's going on. She was trying to keep me from, you know, hurting myself because I had, you know, just coming out of surgery, and I shouldn't have been there to begin with, but I had to be at my benefit. So, but anyway, that's where poor Adam got tated with that kendo stick because he whipped on Susan.
Oh, I got beat by her and by Big Game James.
That's true.
Your Hall of Fame class beat on me that night.
Yep. Well. Dude, you whipped her. She told you to.
Yeah.
She told you to hit
me. Yeah. I blame myself.
You know, I was getting ready to have a match. I think it was Nitro one night, and I'm in the back in the gorilla, and I got the tube, and I'm working out, doing push-ups.
Right.
That's the tube and everything getting right. And the match before me was supposed to be Ming, you know, Haku and Hugh Morris.
Yeah.
Right. And all of a sudden, the agents couldn't find where they were at, right? They were kind of worried because they're on deck. Well, there was commotion going on in the next room next to us, right? And we're all looking at each other going, oh, crap, these two big guys are going at it, right? And
Haku win that, don't worry, but anyway.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
so,
right,
and
exactly.
Haku and Hugh Morris busted through the double doors, right, knocking Arn Anderson and Terry Taylor down, right? And it turns out, they were chasing each other, trying to tickle each other, right? And
what the heck?
Finally, Haku collapses on the ground laughing, and Bill's trying to tickle his armpits, and Haku's like a little kid trying to cover his armpits laughing, right? And I just looked at these two big guys. I just dropped my tube, and I was like, no good the rest of the night. I said, no, what's the point?
I'm done.
Right? Show's over. Wrap it up.
Right.
Card subject to change made me think of something because we were talking about Brody earlier. It's one of the earliest shows I ever worked. It was one of Brody's shows, and it was here in Greenville. And it was the first night I was ever going to tag with Dr. Feelgood, Velvet. The first night we ever tagged together.
Nice.
And that was the start of the Clinically Insane. And we were the second match. And in the opening match, I don't know if you know them, Velvet, J.C. Daz and Scotty Wren. They wrestled a lot in Georgia's Boogaloo crew. But anyways, they were the opening match.
Okay.
And the way we were all trained, because the three of us trained together. We all broke in together. You know,
okay.
You may not be the greatest athlete, but you can hit the ropes hard. You can hit the turnbuckles hard. You can, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Like Terry
they
Gordy.
They did a spot. Yeah.
He would kill
I mean,
ropes,
it, man. Yeah, Scotty was – Scotty's a, he's a big boy. Scotty's about 6'3 and about 280, 290 legit, and he's country strong. You know, he's from
yep.
Piedmont, South Carolina, and he was doing a hillbilly gimmick at the time. And so they did a spot where he threw Daz hard into the corner, and Daz hit those turnbuckles, and the ring broke. The eye that held the turnbuckles, the crossing
right.
turnbuckles on the underneath the ring, snapped.
There's your main
and
event.
Whole,
thanks for coming.
Right? And it seemed like the whole thing was going to collapse in. And I remember Mickey Free was helping Brody Chase run the show. And he comes running through the back. He's like, ah, damn it, the ring broke. And the guys who were wrestling that night, they started losing their crap. They're like, man, we can't go out there without ring ropes. And Brody's like, go out there and fight on the floor. Go out there and just do holds and chain wrestle. You don't need the ropes. If you need the ropes, then you don't need to be in this business.
Correct.
And they started whining and complaining. And finally, Brody stood up. He looked at me and Dr. Feelgood. He goes, okay, fine. Dr. Feelgood, you're working crazy train tonight. 10 minutes through. Y'all got 2 minutes. Figure it out. Next thing I know, the two guys were working that night. Oh, we can do a street fight whenever you need this. They chase their two really, really quick, you know. And
right.
they sent one of the managers out who killed time, you know, doing a promo
right.
while the ring crew used come-alongs and straps to kind of hold the thing together. And we had the ropes were just
oh, wow.
hanging. But we had the match, you know.
Yep.
And but that's what will happen on the show, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think you. What did Punky tell me one time? Ricky Morton. He said, "Train, you ain't really a veteran in this business until you've had your car break down 300 miles from the show and or home."
Yes. Yes.
You've been through a divorce or a long term relationship, and I can't remember what the third one was, but I checked off all three boxes. He said, "Kid, you finally made it."
Right.
Hell, I went through three, four cars in the Midwest. When I was with Lawler and Jarrett.
Oh, I'm sure that
wow.
state, crazy, dude.
5 states every week, and no matter where the hell we're at, whether it be Missouri or Timbuktu, Egypt, we had to be at Channel 5 Memphis that morning for TV.
Wow.
So I want everybody's opinion here. What was the worst
okay.
loop? Was it the old Memphis loop, you know, Evansville, Louisville, Nashville, that whole loop, or was it all them crazy road trips that Bill Watts did back in Mid-South?
No, it's a little bit of both, actually.
yeah.
Well, the way Bill
booked, that's
the way
good Bill
booked where he'd do, like,
good.
Oak City one night and then he'd have you back down in New Orleans the next night.
Yeah.
You'd have
I
to,
mean,
that's a good question. I'm going to bring on next time we talk about this, I'm hoping Hector Guerrero will be on here. And you can ask mm-hmm. him that and ask him what loop it is, the loop. He'll probably tell you.
I never got to do either one of those loops, but I will say this, having worked all those areas for indies, the roads are better in Tennessee than they are in Louisiana.
Reminds me of the time JYD got my, the guy I was working
please
with
tell me
one
JYD
night.
Wasn't driving wherever this story's going.
Oh, no. We're at town,
God,
right?
God, I love Sylvester, but Lord Brother couldn't drive.
And, well, I usually end up being the one driving, so. But it was all good, you know what I mean? I learned that from being with Tommy Rich. We were partners for a while.
Oh, Lord.
I learned to drive real fast. But that's
oh,
not
did you
enough,
have the Doug Gilbert
story.
Spot before or after Doug? I have to ask.
Oh, it was during because we were kind of like a Freebird. We were Freebird type deal in Memphis back when I was Gorgeous George.
Yeah.
On that territory. But, well, JYD, going to the JYD story, right? This guy comes and where we're at just acting the fool, right, in front of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And walks away, and I found out I had to work with him later on that night. And and JYT, he opposed me, says, "Brother, you know what to do." So I didn't know what he kind of – I understood what he meant by that. Well, I wasn't really quite sure, but so later on in the ring, waiting for the guy, right, and the guy comes out. And typical 80s mullet and everything, you know. All of a sudden, halfway down the aisle, he starts holding his ass cheeks and streaks his back and stays in the bathroom all night. Even if they're tearing the ring down and we're going by the bathroom, you can hear him just, scream, freaking out in the bathroom. Turned out, JYD had put Visine, in his water, bottled water.
Oh, man. Good.
So I have a question for y'all.
Okay, go, Adam.
Okay, this is for Strove, Velvet, and Crazy Tramp. Y'all had a conversation earlier in the show about how things are different now from when y'all were training and learning the business. Nowadays, do you think it's harder for younger talent to pay their dues in the business?
It depends on what dues you're talking about, because they're not doing what we did.
Right.
They didn't do the training we did. They didn't do the road traveling that we did. I mean, to me, personally, this is what I'll say, and I'll let them answer. To me, it's more like, look at me. I'm a superstar. Pay me. No. What have you done? What have you done to deserve a spot anywhere? That's just me.
Okay.
Anybody else want to answer? Go for it.
Go ahead, brother. You go ahead and answer, bro.
Well, honest with you, it's just the way the business is. It's not really the fault of the newer generation. It's just what they got to work with, right? Because they don't have to work with what we did, right? So it's like, you know, it's good to be trained in schools and that sort of thing, or developmentals and all that. But the real experience, the real education is getting out there, going to the road, hitting the road, going to these different promotions, doing your thing, getting that experience. There's no substitute for experience, honestly.
No.
And now that the territories isn't as many as they used to be, right, you have to go with what you got. So, you know, to do that, you got to hit the road, hit and make things happen. I know with me, things didn't start happening to me until I started hitting the road, because, I mean, you can't be a big fish in a little pond in this business and expect to get anywhere. I mean, you gotta travel and do your thing and get out there, whether it be around the U.S. and you get lucky enough to get overseas tour, jump on it, get that experience. Because I tell you, if it weren't for me going to different countries and learning my craft, I would have never been prepared for a WCW. You know, at the time when they had like the best from all over the world doing their thing, and if I didn't have that experience doing it, I mean, I'd be like, I'd be a lost cause. So, I mean, that's. Nowadays, I mean, the kids nowadays just need to hit the road and travel and get that experience, man, because that's the only way you're going to get anywhere and get near what we had back then, you know what I mean?
Let me start off with this. I think Velvet and Stro will agree with me. Nowadays, generally speaking, and just pure numbers, the kids nowadays are probably better athletes than us and the guys in our era. But that doesn't mean they're better workers.
Right.
Yeah, big difference.
And I think a lot of that is a lot what you said, Stro. I think it's not getting out. And I'm reminded of a time I was down in Florida, and Steve Kern came by. And he was working that show that night, and I wasn't even preparing to work, but, you know, old pro brought his gear, right? And the promoter had a guy no show, and he said, hey, it was a TV taping. He said, I just need you to take this kid, you know, 5-6 minutes. And Kern was so cool, man. He started talking to the kid. The kid was really nervous because he knew who Steve Kern was, obviously. And he started asking him, instead of talking to him about their match or the business or how long have you been in, he started asking the kid about his family, what he did for a living when he wasn't wrestling, that kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the kid's opening up to Steve, and then Steve reaches into his back pocket, pulls his wallet out, and he starts showing him pictures of his kids. And the kid's like, well, that's a beautiful family. And then Steve puts his arm around the kid, grabs him really tight. He said, when I walked, notice what I said, walked out of the house tonight and I saw them, I plan to walk back tonight. Are we clear, kid? And that's kind of how it ended. And then later on that night, some of the guys I knew down there who were friends with Steve introduced me to Steve a little bit better. And he was laughing, and he was talking to me about, well, how long have you been in the business? And I told him, and he said, well, how many matches have you had? I said, I have no idea, man. He said, oh, thank God. I said, what? And he said, you know, you got these guys nowadays who will tell you, I've been in the business 10 years. And then you ask them, how many matches have they had? And they can tell you exactly the exact number. That's when you need
yes.
to
Yes. Yes.
That's when you
yes.
need to worry. He said,
oh,
I,
God.
You know, I've been working about six, 7 years at that point. He said, the fact that you don't know, kid, tells me that you actually have done something.
That reminds me of a story with I'm in the locker room under the show event, and Tully Blanchard's there, Tully's there, Ricky Steamboat, JJ, I mean, it's like the who's who of the industry there, right? Midnight
right.
Express, the original, well, one of the original versions, Bobby and Dennis, right? And
right.
It's Rick Steiner, Lex Luger, I mean, we're all hanging out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this guy walks in, right? And that was booked in the show. I noticed he didn't say nothing to nobody, right? And in a big ego trip, right? And
mm-hmm.
he gets out there, has his match. He gets in the back, he approaches us. We're all sitting talking, and he's like, well, how'd you like my match, right? Finally, he says something, you know, to everybody. And one of us spoke and says, how long you been in the business? I said, well, I've been in the business 11 years, right? And he said, you know what we think? He said, no, what do you think? He said, we think you need to go out there, buy a ticket, and sit out there with the rest of the Marks and enjoy the show.
Wow.
Oh. And he just hung his head and just walked away.
Yeah. Reminds me of that the line Dutch Uncle Dutch likes to give. Of course, you know Dutch because you worked with us all those times. Stuff.
Yeah.
He said, "You know what?" He was in the locker room one time. He said, "I sure liked it a lot better when the marks were on the other side of the curtain."
Right. They might as well just like have the marks so in the funny. Ring and have us in the audience watching them.
Critiquing them.
Right.
Oh. Yeah, I agree, though, what you said, Stro. It's not – I don't blame the kids. You know what? It's not their fault.
No.
It's just the way the system is now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just hard for them to – look, I'm sure I'm not speaking just for myself. Would I have liked to have had something as nice as a developmental center with all the – and not have to pay the gym fees and the can and bed
right.
fees and all that?
Right.
Yeah, of course I would have.
Oh, God, yeah.
But that wasn't the way it was, you know?
That's right.
It wasn't the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
You just do what you got to do. What you got to go with the hand that's dealt you. And that was the. I mean, and it's my dad always gets concerned because of some of the issues I'm having now with my health because of my career. And I'm like, Dad,
right.
I was a grown man. I knew what I was in for. You know it.
I knew what
like,
you signed up for. Exactly.
Yeah. I willingly took that. I said, remember
right.
that? Remember where we talked earlier about how we're wired differently?
Yeah.
Right.
I explained that to my dad. All of us that get in this business understand that there's potential for that, Dad. And we're grown men and grown women, and we're taking that risk. Nobody's holding a gun to our head.
No, absolutely not. No, absolutely not. My family knew that my sister said, straight up, if you ask my family, she'll be the first one to say, when did David start watching wrestling? 4 years old. She's right. I started watching wrestling at 4 years old. I went to my first match at six, five and a half, before I turned six. And I was
mm-hmm.
up there ever since doing a lot of matches and going. I sat on Johnny Weaver's lap from the time I was five and a half until I was probably 12 or 13 going to the matches in Charleston. And I always told him, I'm going to be a wrestler. He's like, kid, he would tell me, nah, you don't want to do that. I said, I'm going to be in that ring one day. He's like, okay. Like, that's all he would say. He was like, okay. But it is, you know, we are wired differently. My dad, I remember I was probably 15 or 16 watching Boogie on TV, and my dad goes, what is this J.A. shaking around and all this, and he's all on the ground looking like he's having a seizure. I said, wait, just watch.
You know, you do his back elbow, drop the elbow, get the 1-2-3, right? My dad's like, what in the hell is this? So then he started watching
hey,
with me. He started
hey, Velvet, this
me.
Is Dr. John.
Yeah.
We run out of time. Can we have everybody back next week?
Sure. If
sure.
they can make it.
All right, everybody come on back, and we'll finish this up with the Carolina Wrestling Hall of Fame. This is Dr. John and Velvet saying thanks for being on Pro Wrestling Interviews, and we'll see you next week.
All right,
good night,
guys.
Everybody.
Have a good night.
Good night, guys. Good talking to you.